The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a two-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Ride me, it's Football Weekly. Today, Premier League at Anfield. Red hot Nando's treat gives Roy warm feeling inside. While Newcastle, are they Santa's favourite team? With their carol zingers on field and stories of ho-ho-hos off it, it's certainly turning out to be a most festive season on Tyneside. We ran up all the weekend's results in the Premier League and abroad. A 9-0 stuffing in Scotland, a chicken on the pitch in Porto and a missing pigeon in Rome. We bring you the latest from the FA Cup, FC United's win, and we look forward to when Wimbledon's collide. Plus, we take a look at all the midweek action across the continent. All of that and much, much more in today's Football Weekly. Hello, world, and welcome to another week of football on board the pod. Today we have Barney Ronay.
Hi, James.
Hi, Barney. James Dart, who's angrier than Mario Balotelli at the moment. James.
Hi, James. I'm very scalded right now.
You're steamed up in all the wrong ways, aren't you?
Yeah, someone just spilt coffee over my hand.
Can't believe that.
Raging.
That's the dangers of near-Earth orbit, you know, the boiling beverages floating around midair. Barry. Glenn Denning, hello.
Hello.
On we go, then. Some big shocks this weekend. Big, big shocks. Perhaps none bigger than the action at Anfield, where Liverpool overcame Chelsea 2-0. I say it was a big shock, but here's a funny thing. Mulligan and O'Hare, posting on Friday, said Liverpool to beat Chelsea 2-0 at the weekend, just a hunch. Phenomenal stuff.
I hope he had money on it.
I hope he did too. What about this? Was it all about confidence? Was it about the fact that Gillette and Hicks have now gone, or was it a change of formation? What's turned around at Liverpool?
I think it's partly confidence. Everyone seems a bit happier, but there was a bit of a tactical change. They played 4-4-2 and pressed much higher up the pitch in an un-Hodgson kind of way. And as Man City showed, you can hustle this Chelsea midfield if they're not at full strength, and that's what happened.
They're not at full strength, are they? I mean, Essien was out.
Yeah, Essien and Lampard, of course.
And Lampard, yes.
And without those two, Zirkov and Mikel is not a top-class midfield.
All right. Well, what's the story with Lampard? Because he was due back a week or two ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a niggling injury. It's hard for a player who doesn't really often get injured. I mean, he didn't in the past. But he is almost 32 or just about 32. He's played a hell of a lot of games. If you look at his career stats, it's hundreds and hundreds of games, and he's been so reliable. You do wonder if he can come again in the same way.
Interesting.
I kind of disagree with Barney. Where he says Liverpool played in a very un-Hodgson-like way, because I thought it was classic Hodgson in that they maintain this very rigid shape, you know, that Jonathan Wilson goes on about from time to time, the kind where they practice and training all tied together with ropes and whatnot. It was a great performance, but it took the magic from Torres with his two wonderful goals, and Chelsea didn't play particularly well. They looked a bit knackered, I thought.
Yeah. And they didn't have Drogba in the first half as well. But
as you mentioned it, I think the thing was Chelsea could still very easily have come out of that game with a point, if not better. I mean, Torres was fantastic with his goals. It's great. But the save first from Reina, who played very well, I think, and the one that came off the bar, very small margins still, even when playing quite below par, I think, in what we've been expecting recently, they could still easily have got out of that without defeat.
Four wins in a row now for Roy Hodgson there. And they're 2 points off fifth place. Barry, I am concerned about your wager with Sean Ingham, but of course it is still early days. We're only a quarter of the way through the season. But it's interesting how Gerrard pulled them out of the fire against Napoli last Thursday and then Torres this time. So is it all about those two again, or should we give big shouts out to Lucas Leiva?
It's not a bad way to set your team up with two very good players and very energetic supporting. I mean, I think Liverpool will finish in the top four.
Do you?
It sounds like an odd thing, but I was talking to someone who suggested this while they were right down at the bottom. I thought that's absolutely insanity, but he sort of went through it. It's actually a former Liverpool player. He went through the team and said, well, look, I think they're just a couple of tweaks away from being very good.
Right.
And I thought he was completely insane.
Which former Liverpool player was this?
It was the MK Dons assistant coach,
Dean Mohammed,
who I thought he was just being a bit of a cheerleader, but he went through it and suggested various little tweaks that could make, and also pointed out there's not really a fourth very good team around at the moment. And
Ooh.
I think that they might well finish up there.
Right. It wasn't just, I mean, Gerrard and Torres. I think like people like Lucas played very well. He very much maligned at times, and usually by me, and I think, but he was very good yesterday.
And the right back, Kelly, yes. Was very good defensively.
All right, well, Liverpool are going to be in the next match at Wigan, who got beaten at the weekend by Blackburn. Chelsea, in the meantime, are at Fulham midweek. They had two tough games against the Cottagers last season, and there's just 2 points now between Chelsea and the second place side, which is United. Is this just a quick blip for Chelsea, or you're saying they're playing like a team of old people? Is this signs of a potential problem, do you think?
I don't know. Only time will tell.
Right, thanks. Very. Okay.
Is Fulham-Chelsea the most uninspiring, least mouth-watering derby in world football, do you think?
Have you been to Fulham-Chelsea? It's quite angry. They do get a bit angry, yeah.
Do they throw golf balls and chickens?
No, not like that, but they shout a bit, which is, you know, at Fulham is quite, you know, it's quite something.
Raised voices. Yeah.
But I think Chelsea, it's important to note that they haven't bought massively recently, and they have a very good first 11, but there's a lot of players on the fringes who are still coming through.
Right. I mentioned United in second place, and a win for them this weekend, ahead of Wednesday's big clash at Eastland, when they'll be taking on neighbours City. What do we make of Man United? Have they turned this corner, this well-populated corner that everyone's kind of queuing up to get past? Are United back, Barry?
Well, I don't think they ever went away. You know, they're unbeaten in 25 games. That's pretty good by any standards. They were probably quite lucky to get that win against Wolves. Another heroic performance from them. So I think if they continue playing like they have been in the last few games, they'll have no trouble staying up. But I wouldn't be particularly concerned if I was a Manchester United supporter. They were missing a lot of good players as well on Saturday.
Rooney, Berbatov, Owen, Nani, Valencia, Giggs, Carrick and Scholes.
Yeah, that's some quality players there, you know.
But they've won 6 games in 19 days, which that was after quite a few draws in the league and people saying, missing a lot of good players. But what's interesting is they are missing players, but the second string I find really fascinating. I think it's actually a really interesting period in Alex Ferguson's long career where he's having to work with players rather than buying them at quite a sort of late stage at a club which hasn't really had to do that for quite a while. And some of these players are very interesting.
Did he not work with the Golden Generation rather than buy them in?
I was very lucky to have them coming through. Yeah, I mean, he did it, but he's sort of doing it again. It's a really, I think he's sort of managing on the hoof really well. Yeah, I mean, he's a manager maybe quite close to the end of things in terms of his career. But
is part of his management strategy to get Wayne Rooney out of the way until the next transfer window? Because after his chicken nuggets trip to Dubai, he's been sent off to Oregon to do some rehab on that ankle, which must be a really serious ankle injury if they have to fly halfway around the world to sort it out. Back to the match anyway, Owen Hargreaves.
Poor old Owen Hargreaves,
because it was a surprise seeing him on the pitch.
Yeah.
Not a surprise that lasted very long, though.
But it's one of those injuries, isn't it, that you get when you're coming back from a long layoff, you get kind of subsidiary injury. It's a hamstring, wasn't it?
Well, yes, but then again, I saw a quote from the Manchester manager suggesting that he had a panic attack or something.
I mean, it may be that he felt his hamstring a bit, and, you know, there's always a bit of something.
I think Alex Ferguson said he might have felt a certain element of anxiety about it. I think as you say, when you're out for that, anyone who can be out for that kind of period of time, if you feel anything, you're going to feel quite anxious, I would say.
Yeah, indeed. Jisung Park, that's 12 goals in 14 league games, says producer Ben.
Yeah, he's on fire. He's a machine. Who can stop Jisung Park?
Power, pace, precision. Good. Right, there you go. That's Man United, who are facing poor old Wolves, yet again. Deserved better. They're going through this really rough run of fixtures. They've got Arsenal next. We'll talk about Arsenal later on, because quick nod for City before we round out part one. City, as I mentioned, will be hosting Man United this weekend. Big result for Roberto Mancini in the derby of the Italian managers named Roberto up against Di Matteo's West Brom. And after that Lech Poznan disaster, what a crucial win this was.
Important win. I mean, it sort of staves off a certain amount of pressure on it, on his job for at least two more days. City, they got the goals through Balotelli early on. It wasn't the greatest defending from it. Balotelli is just a very entertaining character, I think, for anyone. I think he sort of packs in more per game, than more drama than you get than most players. I mean, I think as you know, and as seasoned sort of viewers from Italian football would know, this isn't exactly surprising.
No, but it is interesting. 204 minutes he's played for City so far. He's had 3 goals, 3 yellow cards and a red. So he's certainly getting...
And an injury.
Oh, and an injury too, yeah.
But I don't know, I mean, James, I don't know if you think it's... I think he could be a really good Premier League player. You know, I think he's really one of those guys who come at the right stage in his career and suits his attributes. We can just calm down a bit. I think he...
Well, you were comparing him to, say, Cantona earlier.
Well, I think sort of Thierry Henry sort of figure, maybe a bit of an enigma at this, you know, early stage in his career, but powerful, pacey and sort of naturally suited to English football.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the producer Ben was saying, is he another Robinho? And I think, no, he's not. He's somebody who does relish the physical side of the
game.
Yeah,
he's a big man and he gets stuck in.
Yes.
He seems to be permanently snarling and angry, though, because he didn't really celebrate either goal when he scored
them. Apart from putting the boot into Mwanda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking to Paul Doyle, who saw him at Wolves, the game against Wolves last week, and said he was absolutely brilliant for the first half hour. You know, couldn't get close to him, and then somebody kicked him quite hard, and that was it. He just spent the rest of the game squaring up to people and actually looking quite frightening because he is a big, strong, angry
man. He's a big unit.
He is indeed a big unit.
I think the thing about Balotelli is he's clearly a brilliantly talented footballer, but I don't think the head will be resolvable. I think they've tried to resolve the head.
The head is unresolvable.
I think the head is unresolvable. That would be my estimate of that whole thing. They're trying to get his red card whatnotted so that he's not suspended for the derby. Would you want him in the derby, James Dart?
As a neutral, hell yeah. I think they're going to struggle because I think it was a red card. I think they're going to struggle to get it rescinded.
That seems like one of those ones that the appeal could be considered frivolous and they'd tack another match ban on. Because I can't see how they could object to it. It was pretty straightforward.
Well, it was a second yellow, and they were both entirely justified.
He kicked someone and got a yellow card for it. They seem unlikely to overturn that.
I think you want him on your team. I can see why you might not want him on your team at times, but I think at the moment he's got that kind of value and sort of he's got the X factor, James.
Do you think... I think were he to be in that game, James Dart is laughing because that was an ironic reference, just in case anyone was...
I'd quite like to see him on the X Factor, though.
Would you?
It would be quite good.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, in football terms, thinking that Sir Alex Ferguson would probably have a field day tactically with somebody like... He'd probably regard that as a real opportunity to get, you know, get his players to get stuck in and, you know, get him to boil over.
Well, I think the word is out on him. I think teams will wind him up and have a go at him. You know what the Premier League's like. As soon as you hear that someone's going to react, everybody starts kicking them.
Yeah.
It's like the way people keep kicking you in the office.
Yeah, people know I react. They know I'm going to rise to it, and they just keep kicking me.
Right.
Yeah.
Careful, Barry, you might go off in here. Let's quickly get some chamomile tea in and move on to part two. Now, Arsenal took on Newcastle with predictably hilarious consequences. We'll be talking more about that game later on, but not about cat suits, Barry, so don't get your hopes up there. Right now, instead, let's dial up our pal Sid in Madrid. Hi, Sid.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm ever so well, and you sound well too.
I'm not too bad, thanks, yeah.
Barney Rone's here, and he's got a question for you.
Okay.
Cristiano
Ronaldo. Is it to do with apples?
No, it's not. Yeah. It's to do with...
There's nothing fruity about this question except... No, of course, because it's got Cristiano Ronaldo in it.
But did Cristiano Ronaldo do some outrageous moment of skill over the weekend that we should all know about? But it's not really a question for Sid. I should probably know this.
Well, it depends what you mean by outrageous, because one or two of Atletico Madrid's players certainly think it was pretty outrageous. There was a shot that the keeper saved and it looped up in the air. Ronaldo saw a teammate behind him and basically just leant into it and played a pass with his back. And I wouldn't necessarily say it was outrageous. It wasn't that particularly difficult, really, given how much time he had, given the ball looped up. And one or two of the Atletico Madrid players after the game were angry because they thought he was basically, you know, taking the mickey out of them and that it's all very easy to do things like that when it's 2-0. And I think most people have kind of dismissed the complaints as little more than a bit of sour grapes. And it was the only real moment the reaction to that, of any kind of sense of rivalry in a derby that I thought was very flat and very inevitable. And Real Madrid just won relatively comfortably. It was a bit kind of, so what?
Met, as you tweeted indeed at the final whistle, a 2-0 win for Real Madrid, who stay top of the league. Anything else you want to add about that game, or should we move on to the other teams?
Well, Madrid got 2-0 up very, very early, and there was a bit of a feeling that they might go on an absolutely better Atletico Madrid, but they controlled the game instead. Mourinho was very keen after the game to talk about control, and he kept on going back to the same thing again and again in the press conference. It's about control, it's about control, it's about getting hold of the ball and stopping the other team scoring. And I think one or two Madrid fans would actually rather that it was about adding a third and then a fourth and then a fifth.
Mm. All right, well, they're getting spoiled, aren't they, really? Well, Barcelona, meantime, looked good value in their game against Getafe.
Yeah, there is a question mark there, though, which is just how good were Getafe. And Barcelona's dominance in the first half in particular was extraordinary. And both the first two goals, though I personally think the replays don't really do them justice because it's more than anything else about the move. I think both the first two goals are really, really brilliant. But as I say, Getafe were very bland. They only made four fouls, I think it was, in the whole of the first half. They allowed Barcelona to play. The possession stats at half time, I think Getafe had 25-26%. And that was only because the goalkeeper took his time taking the goal kicks. Otherwise, it would have been even less. Barca were very, very good in this. But again, it's another weekend in which you're slightly left with that feeling, well, is the league just not really good enough?
All right. Well, you got up in the top four. You got Villarreal and Espanyol, I see, up there in fourth place. Is this because of their new stadium and that?
That's certainly helping. And the back end of last season, once they'd overcome the initial few months of their new stadium, they started getting very, very good results there. They got a very aggressive, very dynamic 0-0 draw. I know that sounds like a contradiction in terms against Barcelona late in the season. They've now won all five games at home this season. Three of them are 1-0s, so and they're against not particularly good teams. I think I'm right in saying Malaga, Almeria, Osasuna, mostly teams in the bottom half, a lot of them teams right near the bottom. They've only won once away, so I think them staying in that position is very, very unlikely. But, of course, it's a fantastic start for them.
Mm, excellent. Sid, anything else we should know about before we let you get on with your busy journalistic broadcasting agenda?
Well, I think there's perhaps one thing that is worth picking up on, and it's the pretty dreadful comments from a guy called Luis Oliver, who, in theory at least, is the majority shareholder at Real Betis. He bought the shares from the notorious Manuel Ruiz de Lopera over the summer. But he's been investigated by a local judge, and the local judge, because of the buyout of the shares, because he's, allegedly, there's question marks over the nature of the purchase and to what extent it's just a sham purchase. And he's been complaining about the attacks that he's been getting from Betis fans and indeed from the judge. And he turned around in midweek and he said, this has got so bad, the only thing left for them to call me is black or Muslim. Mm. So, according to Luis Oliver, the worst possible sin that could ever be is being black or Muslim. Which I'd love to know what his top scorer, MNR, thinks of that, given that he's black.
And Muslim?
I honestly don't know if he's Muslim. I don't think so.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, all very regrettable, eh?
Yeah, and not entirely surprising coming from the man it's coming from, because this is the man who also complained that the judge who was investigating was doing things to him that even the Nazis didn't do to the Jews. So I think good taste is not one of his strong points, as indeed it's not the strong point of the Pope this weekend in Spain. But hey, that's a completely different issue.
Elsewhere in the wide, wide world of football, big derby in Rome, of course. Did any of you catch this? Roma Lazio?
I only heard something about an eagle.
The eagle didn't fly, yeah. Well, as predicted here in this pod, it was a Rome win. Well done for not watching it. I have to say, it was not a particularly inspiring game. Lazio coming into this for only the third time ever as league leaders. And not facing Francesco Totti. Another bit of historical precedent here. Eight derbies that Totti has missed for Roma, and the Giallorossi have lost none of them. Interesting. Hmm. Barry, you were taken by... I'll just briefly recap. The game was won by two penalties for Roma, one of which crept under the keeper, Fernando Muslera, but counted all the same. Lazio upset. They felt they should have had a penalty, but a Roma goal was disallowed for Greco. And it was a bit of a cautious game, and I think Roma just basically... just were more effective when they had chances against Lazio's back line than Lazio were. You were intrigued by the Roma fans' chants at the end.
They were chanting, "Where's your pigeon?" In reference to the Lazio eagle, which wasn't allowed to fly around the stadium,
as is
now customary, in case Roma fans pelted or aimed fireworks at it or something.
Well, I imagine that might have been an issue, yeah. I think it was seen as provocative, which is very much the point, of course.
It's a very fearsome-looking bird.
Well, it's an eagle, Barry, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Now we have five teams in 4 points, thanks to Lazio's defeat. Because Lazio are only 2 points clear of Milan, who had a big win at Bari, with a rather more sensible 4-4-2 formation. After a bit of discussion, Gattuso called out his teammates, and to an extent the manager after the defeat to Real Madrid, saying, you know, we can't play like this. So they basically dropped Ronaldinho for Ambrosini, and one or two things like that, and had a 3-1, 3-2, and had a victory at Bari. Before we get too excited about that, that's Bari's fifth defeat in a row. Gazzetta says, Pippo, where are you after Inzaghi failed to feature in this game? And Robinho, who was playing up front instead, missed four or five big chances. The other thing about Milan, of course, was the Ibrahimovic bust-up with Onyewu, who's a very mysterious figure, Oguchi Onyewu, because he played well in the World Cup, didn't he? He featured in that England game, did he not?
Yeah, that's right.
But he still hasn't played a minute for Milan.
Still hasn't played a minute?
He was in training last week. I don't know how fit he is after Ibrahimovic went in hard, as they say. Right. And after which Oguchi grabbed Ibrahimovic by the neck.
He's a big man as well.
Who, Ibrahimovic?
The other fellow.
Oguchi Onyewu, yes. Yeah, he's a big chap, but he might not be a black belt in taekwondo as Ibrahimovic is.
And we have seen Zlatan doing that in training.
Yeah.
In Milan.
Quality.
Fighting in training. Does he fight for just a couple of seconds and then drift out of it?
It was a team talk, and he basically wandered around the outside of the circle. See, yeah, and then saw the player that he thought wasn't cool enough and aimed a kick at his head. And just pulled it just short, you know, the way that black belts do. So cool. It's derby next week. Milan are playing Inter, who drew 1-1 against Brescia. That's their third home draw in a row. It's all falling to pieces at Inter. That's what the headlines say.
I was most displeased with that result.
Oh, did that? Yeah.
It was my coupon buster.
All right, Benitez. It's suddenly all looking very, very wrong for him. They got their lowest goal tally for 10 years. Moratti, the president, has been having a go at Benitez in the press, which is very unusual for him. He doesn't usually call out his manager, but he was at White Hart Lane on whenever it was Tuesday and left without saying anything to the manager or the players, and then had a go at the fact that Benitez got it all wrong tactically. They've also got loads of injuries now. They notched up their 32nd and 33rd injury of the season. In the game against Brescia. Samuel is out for the rest of the season, having done his cruciate ligaments. Maicon's picked up a strain, which will keep him out for the next couple of weeks. And bizarrely, Wesley Sneijder fainted in the dressing room at half-time and couldn't come out for the second half, which is truly bizarre. Not often you hear of a young athlete fainting in the dressing room. I don't know, somebody probably mentioned Gareth Bale or something, and then collapsed. Anyway, so they're all basically, you've got Lazio, then Milan, Inter, and then Juve and Napoli together on 18 points, which is, what, four behind Lazio. Just to mention that one of the big questions at Juve, who had a 3-1 win at the weekend with Cesena, is what's happened to Gigi Buffon? What? Nobody knows. He didn't turn up for an official team photograph last week, and so everyone was saying, hang on. And he said, oh, I was off collecting a prize in Switzerland, you know, where they do a lot of prize giving in early November, and which was a shame because his manager said something quite different, and then they kind of got their story straight. But then the manager said, well, he is, you know, fit and should be coming. No, not fit, but he's training again and he should be back in the new year. But it might be nice if he turned up every now and then to our games, because he might not realise how long he's been away. But he hasn't basically turned up to a game all season. Instead, he's been going to see Carrarese, which is a team that he actually owns shares in. And yeah, so the supposition is that he's off to, they say, Man United come January.
Obviously.
Obviously. Obviously, there you go. What a rip-roaring Italian roundup that is. Elsewhere, Celtic, 9-0 Aberdeen, Barry.
Yes, it was a fairly emphatic win, to say the least. I think possibly based in two sort of different approaches by the managers to the game. Mark McGee, the Aberdeen manager, went into the game by criticising his players and basically rubbishing them publicly, saying that if they didn't get their act together and start defending properly, they were going to ship an awful hiding. So they responded by not getting their act together, not defending properly, and shipping an awful hiding. Neil Lennon, on the other hand, he had invited Henrik Larsson to Celtic's last training session before the game, and he trained with the team, and then Lennon sat them all down around him in a circle, Phil Brown style, and with Larsson, and explained, you know, how much he sort of sweated blood for Celtic and how much he meant to the fans. So that kind of perked the players up, I think, and they raised their game. And it was 10 men against 10 for most of the game, but or 10 men against 10 boys. But I think Aberdeen just completely
capitulated. Oh, so both sides were down to 10 men, were they?
Yeah, Aberdeen went down to 10 men first after 26 minutes, and then Celtic had a fella sent off after 41.
All right.
So two players got hat-tricks, and Anthony Stokes could have got four, but he gave a penalty away to Paddy McCourt, the late doors, just because he was coming back from a horrible run of injuries. So he wanted to give him a bit of a boost. The other interesting game in Scotland this weekend, two interesting games in Scotland in one weekend, who knew, was the Edinburgh Derby. Hearts beat Hibs 2-0 at Easter Road, but it was marred by a lot of separate incidents in which bottles, coins, lighters and fireworks were thrown at various players.
It's not good, though, is it? I mean, you don't want to see 9-0 results in your league, really, do you?
Okay, quick straw poll. Do you want to see 9-0 results?
I have no problem with 9-0.
Something's gone terribly wrong if someone's winning 9-0 and you're
Gone terribly right. For one.
Well, what's worrying is that the game I saw Celtic playing against Rangers, they were terrible.
Mm.
So if a team that bad can beat another team in that division 9-0, it's a serious
problem. One defeat for Celtic and Rangers all season so far. They're both already. I mean, many more results like this, and people will be saying there are just one or two good teams in Scotland and the rest of it.
Well, that's a negative
point. Far be it for me to suggest that certain Old Firm fans are paranoid, but a lot of Rangers fans think that Aberdeen roll over for Celtic every year, much the same way as Steve Bruce teams tend to roll over for Manchester United, and that Aberdeen only put in four good performances a year, and that's when they play Rangers.
Right.
But, I mean, in the run-up to this game, Gary Hooper, who scored a hat-trick on Saturday, he's saying, oh, refs have got it in for Celtic. Imagine how many they'd have scored.
Yeah, if it weren't for the refs. By the way, are you in favour of 9-0s? Are they a good thing?
I prefer 10-0s, like Final got dished out the other week.
Yeah.
While everyone thinks there might be something wrong with a team beating another team 9-0.
Yep.
Nobody has the slightest problem whatsoever with Hearts and Hibs fans throwing bottles, coins, lighters and fireworks at players. It's particularly one poor sod who was getting treated for an injury after getting hacked down from behind, and he was getting pelted.
Oh, while he was on the ground?
Yeah, he was being treated on the sideline and all these missiles were just raining down on him. But Celtic beat 9-0, and that's the far main worse.
Thing. It's a man's game.
It is a man's game, and in some cases a chicken's game as well. I'm referring to the game between Porto and Benfica at the weekend in the, what is it, Liga Sagres still? Superliga in Portugal, anyway. Top two teams, these, in the aforementioned division, and it was a 5-0 win for Porto, who now lead the table by 10 points. Apparently Hulk, I have to say, didn't see this game. I have seen the bit, though, with the chicken. Hulk was simply unplayable, say reports. And the Porto fans made the Benfica keeper Roberto the subject of a barrage of items. A lot of golf balls, which isn't funny, because that would really hurt. And also a chicken, which apparently is some play on the fact that a frangle, which is also the word for a real howler.
Was it a live chicken? Or
yeah, very much so. And then the steward tries to collect it with predictably hilarious consequences, because chickens are pretty nimble beasts.
They threw a live chicken.
Yeah, they threw a live chicken.
He scampered pretty impressively behind the guy, evaded one steward, but he got picked up by the next one, sadly.
Mm.
But it wasn't the best on-field protest or anything at the weekend.
Ah.
Bâle, FC Bâle in Switzerland. There was
Isn't it Basel? Didn't we decide it was Basel?
Bâle. Yeah. Barl. They had a tennis ball protest.
Barl is the Brecht piece that...
They had a tennis ball protest, apparently, because their game was scheduled at the same time as the final of this weekend's tennis tournament in the city, I believe. And
can't believe that.
They responded by unloading... it looked like pretty much like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tennis balls raining down onto the pitch.
Really?
It's worth checking out on YouTube.
Right. The championship... QPR are back on top after Cardiff lost 1-0 in a hard-fought South Wales derby with Swansea.
Yeah, I think Swansea were pretty good value for it. Cardiff didn't really perform that well. Didn't really turn up. I think in terms of that, they sort of ascended to the top of the table going into this game. I still don't think necessarily by playing their best football. And Swansea got the winner through Marvin Emnes, who's Dutch striker on loan from Middlesbrough at the moment, young Dutch striker. And I mean, Craig Bellamy had a couple of good opportunities that he could easily have got something out of the game for Cardiff, but didn't. And yes, Swansea right in the sort of leading the chasing pack behind the top two. As you said, QPR are top of the table. They beat Reading 3-1 and had 10 men for a long period of the game, and it proved no real handicap for them. They're still strolling along.
It's a really big result for them. They're actually scoring some goals because they've been sort of drying up a bit, and they've got Hulse back, who will be a big, literally big player for them.
All right. Yeah. What's the story? There was a big thing with Billy Davis. Is he having another war of words, a spat, as they say?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for Billy Davis to have a spat with sort of his employers, wherever he is, but there are sort of insinuations and claims that he may be only sort of turning up for work 3 days a week at Nottingham Forest. And I mean, the form hasn't been great.
So is that not a good thing, Jim?
I don't know. Maybe if he does even less, they might do better.
Oh.
They haven't been doing particularly... comparatively to last season, so fantastic. Well, at Nottingham Forest, haven't lost that many games, drawn an awful lot, but I think they were probably thought that they might do better going into the season. And barring Lewis McGugan, who's been fantastic for them, scoring an absolute welter range of goals this season, they'd be
Fryker of a
shot. I don't know, but James Dart's arms were so wide when you talk about goals.
We need Shawnee here to make.
He's got a really nice range of goals, but be it from like spectacular sort of short range, spectacular long
short
range,
ones, long ones, fast ones,
cross come shots, slow you name ones. It. He's got it. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I love Billy Davis. Though. He's great, isn't he? He's absolutely mad. He's always punching the air and striding off and being cross with people.
He's got short man syndrome.
He lets it all out though. There's nothing.
I was on the tube on the way home last night. And the guy sitting beside me asked me, was I Barry Glendening? And I sort of like, I went, yeah, I am.
You smoothed out your, yes, I am Barry.
I was reading the paper and handed him the laminated card, yes, I am Barry. And thought I was great until he pointed out that the whole right-hand side of my face was covered in ink from the newspaper I was reading. And that I looked a bit of a tit.
But anyway, sleeping on it, Barry, or what?
No, it was an Irish paper, and I don't know, for whatever reason, the ink doesn't stay on the page.
Was it the side
well.
That he was sitting on?
Yes.
So he was looking at you through this mist.
Yeah, I looked like a Chilean coal miner.
Right.
But he's...
So in actual fact, the fact that you were... Oh, no, because it wasn't The Guardian. Had it been The Guardian, you could have had the fact that you were Barry Glendening written all over your face, quite literally.
Quite literally, yes. But he was just back in London from having been up to see... Derby County smite Portsmouth 2-0, and he asked specifically that we direct some love in the way of the Rams.
All right, nice one.
In what way would he like us to direct love to the Rams?
Well, I suppose they're the team that give us social networking's Robbie Savage 8.
Yeah.
And for that alone, we should be thankful.
He's one of the nicest people you could hope to meet off the pitch.
That's really?
That's what they say, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what he said specifically about himself. Part 3. Premier League in a minute or two, but first, James Dart, intriguing news from the FA Cup.
Intriguing.
Yes, FC United of Manchester, they only went and won at League One Rochdale, and now who are they playing?
Brighton or Woking.
Yeah, this is amazing, the fairy tale continues.
It is, I mean, I keep thinking that it's almost heresy to say anything bad about FC United, really. And I've kept trying to think it over in my head and thinking, well, it's beneficial position coming from where they've come from. Some of the fans should maybe just have gone and supported another local team if they weren't happy with it. But ultimately, I just sound churlish and bitter, and I think good luck to them.
Barry,
you don't like FC United, do you?
I don't dislike them at all. I think they've done a great job. But, you know, Droylsden are another non-league team in Manchester who won over the weekend. They didn't get 67.5 grand from ESPN for their game. Been on TV, and you know they're not getting any of the credit or publicity. FC United just seem to be hogging the publicity up in that neck of the woods. And it's not surprising because it's a good story. What you know, the United fans breaking away, setting up their own club. But yeah, there are. I read somewhere once somebody was criticising them, saying you know the way they go on, you'd think they'd invented non-league football. They're just another club, and it's probably worth remembering that sometimes.
Mm.
They're also not the same as AFC Wimbledon. I mean, they're sort of lumped in together.
Who? FC United of Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, they're often spoken of in the same breath, but I mean, I think they're important distinctions there.
All right, well, let's talk about AFC Wimbledon, because the other big FA Cup story is the fact that MK Dons and AFC Wimbledon are now drawn to meet if they can win their replays first. So this is the day we all talked of, no?
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? It's just brilliant.
But they don't want it, is that right?
Well, I think they're a bit worried about what might happen. There's still, quite rightly, a lot of bitterness, and you're pointing at me.
No, just to say, for anyone who doesn't know, can you just briefly kind of the backstory?
Well, anybody who doesn't know, in 2004, Wimbledon Football Club in the borough of Merton was uprooted as part of a franchising process and taken to Milton Keynes, where a team called MK Dons was set up in the old hockey stadium at first, in an attempt to garner a new audience from the new town, which doesn't really have a club. Well, actually did have some clubs, and had Milton Keynes City, which is now deceased.
And they were allowed to keep their league position?
Yeah, kept the league position, but basically the team was new stadium, new name, new kit. They even kept, at first, Wimbledon's FA Cup winning gong, which has now been righted. Initially, I mean, obviously, Wimbledon fans are absolutely appalled. Their local club, a non-league club for a long time, victim of his own success in some ways, and a victim of some horribly entrepreneurial, grasping people who wanted to make a bit of money out of their success. And Wimbledon fans did, some Wimbledon fans actually still go to Milton Keynes. Milton Keynes get crowds of about 8,000 in, but it still hasn't taken.
And some of them actually travel from Wimbledon, do they?
A very small amount of people still do. But basically, one of the great things about MK Dons, if you can take a positive out of it, is A, it hasn't worked. It's not been a success. And they desperately need promotion this season to keep things going there. And it's highly unlikely someone would try this again. And secondly, I mean, the club itself, the people who work there, they actually do a hell of a lot in their community, and they really do get out there. And if every club was run along those lines, you know, football would be a much more kind of touchy-feely place.
And AFC Wimbledon, meantime, is the club that the supporters, who'd been left behind, orphaned, if you will, by the entrepreneurial shenanigans, they set up their own club, started again from the lowest rung of all, and have... Where are they now? They're Blue Square
they're
Premier?
Top of the Blue Square Premier.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so it's a massive success story, and you know, nothing but credit to them. And it would just be fantastic if they can get back in the league. And obviously fantastic if they can beat the MK Dons in the FA Cup.
I think, for us, for neutrals, for the media, I mean, I'd love to see it. I think the media want to see it. AFC Wimbledon fans do not want to see them play MK Dons. They don't want to even dignify the existence of MK Dons by playing them. As simple as this. And as you mentioned, the very much distinction between FC United of Manchester and AFC Wimbledon is Wimbledon had their club wrested out of them completely. I know they will argue, you know, FC United fans might argue and say, well, it was wrested out by our ludicrous ownership. AFC Wimbledon had their club hijacked and taken from them and completely replaced them in a completely different place. I think it'd be very interesting in terms of moral sort of reasoning for what AFC Wimbledon fans would do in terms of if they were drawn in Milton Keynes, would they go to that match? Or if they're at home, would they watch it? Would they do anything? Because it would no doubt be televised and there would be money. And the fact would therefore be the existence of AFC Wimbledon would be helping to contribute money to MK Dons by playing that game.
AFC Wimbledon, their trust has had a debate, actually, if we do end up playing, will we honour the fixture? That's how strongly they feel about it. And they've decided, yeah, we will honour the fixture, because if they didn't, the repercussions would be enormous. They wouldn't possibly be put out of existence, so they'd have been killed by MK Dons twice. But there's a guy called Alan Thomas, who's an AFC Wimbledon supporter, wrote a good article in... You can see it on the When Saturday Comes website. But he said, I don't believe the club, MK Dons, has a right to exist. I wanted to go out of business as soon as possible. I don't want Wimbledon giving Milton Keynes any sort of spurious legitimacy by playing them. So, like James said, while neutrals would be intrigued by the prospect, AFC Wimbledon fans have no interest in
it. It's an enduring scandal that the Football League allowed this to happen. But, yeah, one consolation... Nobody thinks it's been a success. It's still considered, quite rightly, I mean, you know, time has not healed the wounds.
But I'm surprised that MK Dons are doing that badly, because until a year or two ago, they were actually seen as quite a successful small club.
Well, they're at the same tier that Wimbledon were at when this whole sorry business started. And they don't they don't draw in big crowds. They get quite a few school kids. They've got a massively cheap season ticket drive thing going on, and you know, there's no way, they haven't even bothered putting the rest of the seats in their stadium because there's no one to sit there. I also think it's a scandal that they have a good chance of getting a World Cup match if we actually which seems increasingly unlikely. I mean, why? This is not a centre of football in this country.
I don't even think if MK Dons fans would particularly want this tie to go ahead. It doesn't happen for their players. Maybe possibly their captain, Dean Lewington, who actually did play for Wimbledon in their prior existence. But for us, we'll be rubbing
our hands. I think the goalkeeping coach used to play for Wimbledon. I think Paul Held is still the goal. I think he's the only other real obvious connection. And Luke Chadwick played against the old Wimbledon for Reading. And he's there now.
Mm.
Actually, the manager, Carl Robinson, he was a coach at Liverpool, very nice man. It's very hard to condemn the people actually involved because he's obviously doing a very good job and everybody there likes him a lot and the club is very friendly, etc., etc. It's just its basic existence is wrong.
Well, that's fascinating stuff. Both teams look likely to go through if they win their games against Stevenage and Ebbsfleet. In the Premier League, meantime, Stoke are up against Birmingham. Spurs take on Sunderland. Now, Sunderland, hey, Barry, they got a 2-0 win, didn't they, Asamoah Gyan?
Somewhat fortuitous 2-0 win.
Still?
Lee Cattermole should probably have been sent off for the third time this season for a spectacularly deliberate handball that Martin Atkinson, the referee, somehow contrived to not see.
He did it twice as well, just in case anyone in black had missed it. But missed it they did.
It was astonishing. I mean, Stoke have... obviously, I was pleased Sunderland won, but Stoke should have every right to feel very, very hard done by.
Right. Did Tottenham have any right to feel hard done by their 4-2 defeat at Bolton?
I don't think so. They were comprehensively outplayed.
It's a good game, though. They're good fun having Coyle's Bolton.
Mm.
And Spurs are brilliant to watch at the moment. It's completely kind of mad roller coaster ride.
Do you think that Spurs are going to finish fourth again this year?
No.
You think Liverpool are?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think Spurs, it's very hard. Forget how quickly they've risen up the league, and this has all come very quickly, and the squad is a bit uneven, and it's going to be very hard for them to fight on two fronts.
Right. And what about Tom Huddleston's naughty stamp? That was brutal, wasn't it?
Well, that's not the first time he's done that this season. And I think he got away with it against FC 20. I'd be surprised if he gets away with it this time.
Yeah. Now, anyway, so as you say, Spurs have lost to Wigan and Bolton after their Champions League games midweek, and they've dropped down to seventh place.
Do you think, actually, if the FA do show signs that they might punish Huddleston, Harry Redknapp can just come out and threaten to not do any television interviews, and then they'll let him off?
Hmm. Here's hoping, Barry. In other games, Wigan take on Liverpool. West Ham are up against West Brom. Avon Grant on borrowed time, they say. After going from 2-0 up to 2-2 with Birmingham this weekend. We'll see about that, perhaps, with that home match with the Baggies. Wolves, they're due a break, aren't they? They host Arsenal. Arsenal, what happened to them? The Newcastle game. Newcastle have moved up to fifth place and looking very impressive.
They were very impressive. Andy Carroll sort of bounced back from some fairly negative tabloid coverage on Sunday morning to score a winner. Possibly the best English centre forward at the moment, was left completely unmarked to head in the only goal of the game. Joey Barton was fantastic again. He should be in the England team. Don't know if he'll get picked or not because of his previous
But Carroll apparently is going to be picked, and he's got previous.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. Arsenal just weren't at the races at all, and Newcastle defended really, really well. That guy they have in midfield, Cheick Tiote, he's very, very impressive. Again, he's been a real one of the buys of the season. They got him from FC 20, and Newcastle fans should be delighted. They're a good side. I mean, I don't think there's any danger of them getting relegated whatsoever, you know.
I think they were helped. I mean, Fabianski's flap was quite spectacular, and it's only a matter of time usually with him, it seems. But I mean, no, I mean, Newcastle, all credit to them. And I mean, there was a period over the turn of the millennium, I think they didn't win in London for more than 4 years. It was about 29 games they went winless in London, and now they're 3-3 with wins at Chelsea and admittedly a reserve side, Chelsea and
in the League Cup
and Arsenal and West Ham this season. But still, I still think for them
it's amazing, isn't it? Especially because you mentioned the League Cup. Arsenal went to Newcastle and beat Newcastle 4-0, was it, in the League Cup?
Yeah, well, a couple of weeks ago. Seems that Arsene Wenger desperately needs some silverware.
Right. Newcastle are a good away team as well. They work very hard. They sometimes look a bit more compact when they can just sort of press and counter attack.
Stats say Opta Joe has Cesc Fabregas with 27 misplaced passes, which is very worrying.
He was very off colour yesterday. He didn't look fit at all.
He's just coming back from long term injury. I think we forget these days it takes 4 or 5 games to really get back, a minimum, and especially for someone like him who's on the ball all the time and who relies on his touch. He's not going to sort of battle his way through it.
And I mean, it's the second time this season that Arsenal have lost at home to a newly promoted team. I think it's something like more than 3 decades since that last happened. I mean, it's the two teams that have come up against them and played very well down there and fully merited it, I think.
Have you seen Joey Barton's hair, actually? And Chris Hughton's hair. There was some very interesting hair on.
Why? What was wrong with Chris Hughton's hair?
Well, Chris Hughton, in his post-match interview, one side of his head, it's like your man Two-Face from Batman. One side of his head is black and the other is grey, as if he sort of was dying it and then went to answer the phone or something and forgot, to finish the job. It's weird.
And you on the tube the other day. Yeah. You could read in the newspaper. If you'd met each other, with a strange, shadowy reflection.
And then Barton has very short back and sides, but quite a lot left up on top, and it's swept to one side.
He's got an interesting 1970s fringe.
Raffishly. I'd go more on 1950s Brill Cream advert.
An Italian footballer from the 1950s.
Yeah. All right.
Advertising
Brill Cream, right. Well, thank you ever so much. That's it for today's Football Weekly. We've got a very, very packed-sounding Football Weekly Extra coming up on Thursday, so hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, to James Dart, Barney Rene and Barry Glendenning, and you, the listener. We'll be speaking to you on Thursday. Goodbye.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
The Guardian.